I love the smell of the MicroConf podcast in the morning. I'm your host, Rob Walling. Today is a tactics episode where we pull audio from one of our amazing YouTube videos. Today, we're talking about how this 10X SaaS developer decides what not to build. This is where I have a conversation with Mr. Derek Reimer. You probably know him and love him from the Art of Product podcast, co-founder of Drip, and the founder of SavvyCal. He gives some great advice on how to think through product decisions, what to build, what not to, and his mental framework behind making those decisions. Before we dive into that, you should check out MicroConf Connect at microconfconnect.com. This is our online community and forum. We host it in Slack, and we're approaching 7,000 members. They're bootstrapped and mostly bootstrapped SaaS founders. Recent conversations in Connect, including a debate about magic sign-in links, how long you should spend diving into a niche before deciding on the product offer, how to safeguard your product from misuse during free trials, at what point in your journey should you invest in a conference booth, and more. It's a vibrant and highly moderated community, very high signal to noise. If you're looking to find and hang out with other misfits like you and I, head to microconfconnect.com. So with that, let's dive right into our conversation. As you build your SaaS, it's easy to get lost in a mountain of feature requests, not knowing which ones you should focus on. Deciding what to build next and which ideas you should not build is actually really hard. So in this video, I sat down with Derek Reimer, one of the best product people I've ever worked with, to chat about how he decides which features to build next. We talk about real examples from the business he's building right now called SavvyCal. It's the best calendar scheduling app I've ever used. Later in the video, we talk about specific features he decided not to build, even though on the surface, it seemed like a good opportunity. And if you stick around to the end, Derek and I chat about why building everything your customers ask for might be a recipe for disaster. Let's dive in. What recent feature did you ship that you feel like was the right decision? And what was the logic behind deciding to do that? Whether it was tons of customer requests or whether you just knew in your founder gut or whether it was a competitor, there's a bunch of reasons why you would do it. And then let's touch on like one feature or more, frankly, that you haven't built, probably aren't going to build, and why.
One of my favorite ones that we shipped this summer, I think it was about a month ago, is this feature. It's kind of a simple one, but it had been on my radar for a little while. And it's sort of just in reviewing my backlog. And I like to keep a backlog of things, just ideas. Anytime someone requests something, I usually log it in there and then sort of store up, anytime someone mentions it in a Help Scout conversation, I drop a link to it just as kind of a knowledge repository. And this one had been floating around and resurfacing for a while. It's basically a little feature that allows you to toggle on a setting to require approval for new bookings before they make it onto your calendar. So, think like if you're really busy and say you're just a busy person in general, and you have one reusable link that is just out in the wild. People use it all the time. We often have kind of our one multi-use link that maybe we store in our text expander or whatever, and it's just the one that gets shared around, usually like /chat after your name, right? And so a lot of times people who are in really high demand will just see people using their link and grabbing time on their calendar. And so there's something very visceral with people who feel this pain. It's like, this is really a major problem. And so they either resort to like not having a multi-use link or using an unguessable URL or just other solutions that just don't quite feel right and feel like we could be doing something on the product side to alleviate this. This also happened to be like one of the favorite features from a scheduling tool called X.AI that was acquired and then shut down last year. So I hear, anyone who comes over from X.AI is likely to request this one, right? So it's been coming up over and over. But again, it's just one of those decisions, like even though it's just a toggle in the UI and just a slight modification to the booking flow, it's still not a foregone conclusion that we're going to build it. But the things that really tipped me over the edge on it were one, just strong visceral demand from a group of people who are really passionate and, like, I would say scheduling power users, and we have gradually become a tool that I think a lot of people in their minds think of it as sort of a scheduling power tool. Like, you know, obviously when you're young, you're behind the competition in a lot of different ways. So it's hard to foster that perception early on, but we've been at it for a few years now and have mostly caught up on feature parity. And now people actually see us once they get in the product, they realize that a lot of our UX is an improvement over the status quo, and they can do more things to guard their time. They can use like a ranked availability feature and some of these things that we have that help people who care a lot about shielding their time, protect it basically. So this one felt like it was philosophically aligned with where our product's going. It doesn't overcomplicate the product in confusing ways. Like, most of the complexity actually lives under the surface. And for the user, it's just like, do you want to enable this or not? And so, yeah, it was like, it was a combination of strong demand, differentiation, alignment with kind of the philosophy of what we want SavvyCal to be. And like, I always think about too, is this attracting the right kind of user, the kind of user that we feel like we're able to serve well? And I think those who care about toggling this on is an ideal, you know, user of SavvyCal because of the things we care about. Yeah.
I really like that. I think that's something that more founder, I don't think that's intuitive for a lot of people. And the fact that you've just called it out, I think is a huge deal. It's like, how many people will use it and what kind of customer will use it?
Yeah, there's a certain magnetism that features have, and they can draw in more of the people that are really in the sweet spot for. We have built some things. I'm trying to think if I have a specific example. I might think of one in a minute, but I feel like there are some features that we build that suddenly start attracting people who aren't a super good fit. And that's always just it can be a frustrating process for the user because they're all excited and they think SavvyCal is going to be the tool for them, and then realize that we're missing the mark on a number of things, but they were attracted by this one thing. So I just want to be mindful and careful about, you know, just thinking about that, giving some thought to that when marketing features and building them.
How about on the flip side, a feature or features that for the foreseeable future, you know, it is not going to build, or a recent thing you decided we're not building, and what was the thought process there?
Yeah. So one of the big ones is SMS notifications. So this one does come up. It's certainly requested from time to time, and it's a feature that a lot of other scheduling tools have built into them. Think of like classic examples in my mind are ones that are like you're, you know, going to get a haircut or a dentist appointment or something. Like, they're often sending text messages to remind you. And this is one where I've struggled a lot with it, trying to understand, you know, why people want it, because I personally never want to receive a text message from a scheduling tool. And I think I do have, even though I'm not like a perfect representation of my customers, I think, you know, a lot of my customers are similar to me in that, you know, we're using this for kind of business to business meeting scheduling, and we're near our calendars a lot, and we probably have Google Calendar installed on our phone, and we'll get like a, you know, a little notification through there. So like, I don't know, just the need for it kind of eludes me a little bit. And then I've spoken to a number of folks who have endeavored to do this. Actually, I was speaking to some former colleagues at Drip, and they added SMS support into the product. And I got to hear some war stories about just how much of a bear that is to maintain. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so things like, you know, you think dealing with email spam is bad. Wait until you deal with all the regulations and constraints around sending text messages on behalf of people. Even though there's tools like Twilio, which are amazing and give you a nice API on top of the lower level SMS stuff, it's still it certainly doesn't solve all of the complexity that you have to deal with when doing this. And so it's just kind of one of those giant iceberg features. Like, you know, a certain percentage of people would just toggle it on, like, sure, send a text message. Yeah, why not? And maybe not even give much thought to it. But under the covers, there's so much complexity to maintain. And there are honestly other ways around it too. People can accomplish this with Zapier. You know, there's different integrations that you can connect to your Zapier account. So if you really need this, you can do it today. And I would kind of much rather push that complexity off to Zapier for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. And with an N of two, one being you and me being the second one, I would never use that feature. And yep. So I wonder if, and you know, we, TinySeed MicroConf are obviously a SavvyCal customer.
Yeah.
And so does it, you know, would it attract the right kind of customers, going back to the feature, you know, that you said earlier? And obviously, you know, if you listen to this podcast, it's like two people does not a focus group make, but it is, I can imagine, you know, my uncle who's a realtor wanting to turn that on, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, is that where SavvyCal wants to be right now? Because I think more perhaps sophisticated, like founders, entrepreneurs, executives, tech entrepreneur, senior leaders, whatever it, you know, it is that you're focused on at SavvyCal, those folks are probably more in our line where they, you know, in our situation where I'm also in front of my calendar all day and my phone buzzes with a little reminder and that's all I need. And, you know. Yep.
We've been partnering with Lemon.io for several years, and they've proven to be a great choice when it comes to hiring for a highly skilled developer to work on your project. Here are five reasons why you should consider working with Lemon.io. Number one, the time from your request to getting a candidate is just 48 hours. Number two, their developers have previously worked with tech giants like Apple, Google, Netflix, Airbnb, Intel, and Lego. Number three, they only provide senior devs with an average of 7 years experience. Number four, their talent pool covers more than 300 dev languages and frameworks. And lastly, number five, your hire comes with a zero-risk replacement guarantee. Customers of Lemon.io typically stick around for at least a year, proving they know how to gain your trust by delivering consistent results. Quit wasting time searching for a solid developer at a great price. Get in touch with Lemon.io. We have a special discount for fans of MicroConf. Visit lemon.io/microconf to receive a 15% discount for the first 4 weeks of working with a developer. That's lemon.io/microconf.
Another one that kind of comes to mind is, so some people use SavvyCal, a very small percentage of our customers use SavvyCal for a lot of internal scheduling, which, you know, theoretically is a pretty powerful way to use it, right? Like you share a booking link to someone inside internal to your company, and they can use that as sort of a curated window into your availability. Even though most companies of a certain size these days are either using the built-in Google Calendar sharing technology, Microsoft Outlook has it also. So then there's like a lot of sophisticated tooling built up in those ecosystems around, you know, sharing calendars with your colleagues and adding colleagues and finding times that work for everybody and doing collective scheduling. Like, so a lot of these problems are sort of already solved, which is why I've been hesitant to try to bill SavvyCal as an ideal solution for doing internal scheduling. You know, it's like you can use it for that, but it's probably not going to be better than the built-in bundled solutions into the ecosystem. And like, I had some requests the other day from a customer that he was asking for the ability for events created by SavvyCal to be editable by anybody added on the calendar invite, which struck me as curious. So I dug into it a little bit and asked him some more questions and discovered that he was basically using this as a way to use round robin and put time on one of their internal team members' calendars. And then from that point, that person would sort of take ownership of the calendar event and, you know, literally take ownership of the event, like it would get transferred. So that would sever our connection to the event because it would get a new owner in the calendar system. And then they would add external people onto the calendar event and reschedule it if needed. And this was just causing all kinds of problems with our ability to stay in sync with that calendar event. And I thought for a second, like, we need to solve some of these problems and maybe add a setting to allow it to be editable. But then realized, like, for anyone who's doing the traditional path of like sending a link, scheduling something with an external party, you would never want it to be fully editable by all parties. And a lot of these other problems just simply don't surface for that happy path.
Right. And when that comes up, you know, you have to say, oh, is this a new market that we should build for? Like, is this a use case that no one has been paying attention to? And this can open up a bunch of new customers. And are these the customers we want to work with? Yep. Can this help alter my vision, right? You have a pretty strong vision for your product. I'm the same way. And sometimes you get a feature request and you're like, that's not in my vision, but should it be? Mm-hmm. Is this such an opportunity, like building workflows, like building automations, you know, it's like that this changes the whole direction, but it could be amazing. Or is this one of those things I'm going to add and then I'm going to regret?
Yep.
Because one person wanted it, or the people who do want it are just not good fits for us, or they're using it in a way that really that's not where we're headed.
Yep.
You know, we can grow faster. We can get more customers through other, you know, other easier wins.
Mm-hmm. And that's where, like, yeah, it's important not to get too myopic. Sometimes you do want to keep an open mind, right? And especially, I think, as a pretty horizontally positioned product, there's all the more, I guess it's more difficult to know whether you're making the right decisions in general, because you have a lot of different, you have a variety of people using the product. Most SavvyCal users care about creating an optimal booking experience, but they are horizontal across a lot of different industries and use cases. So like making sure you're staying in line with what your market needs is extra difficult when you're positioned in this way. Which is why I'm a big fan of logging most things. This runs counter to that traditional like 37 signals wisdom of like never write down a feature request and just expect it to resurface if it's important. I used to think that way, but more and more, I don't trust my own brain to remember when certain trends start to emerge because there's so much noise all the time. So I like to log these in a place. I use our backlog for it. Some people are viscerally opposed to that, but you know, even just a spreadsheet could be a good place to just kind of keep track. Like, how many times has this come up? Has this come up more recently? Should I be thinking strategically about like potentially building this thing? And that's just helpful. And I review it periodically and just kind of keep it fresh in my mind.
Yeah, I can imagine, much like I will take notes on anything, whether when I used to think of business ideas, or now I'll think of like, oh, this interesting marketing approach, or maybe I should write a book chapter about this, or record a podcast episode about this crazy topic. Mm-hmm. And I just write all that stuff down in notebooks, and periodically, just like it's a backlog, right? It's a backlog of ideas, and periodically I revisit them. And usually it's like, hey, that's not a good idea, and here's why. But in a year, it might be a good idea, because mm-hmm. you might change direction. You know, strategy changes over time, and the direction of your product and your vision, it can change. And so I can see that being valuable. In a minute, Derek and I talk about using what I call the founder filter to find product market fit. But first, if you've enjoyed this video, you're going to love Startups for the Rest of Us. It's the podcast that we pulled this video segment from, and I've been recording and shipping it every week for over 13 years. On the podcast, I go deep into a wide range of SaaS topics and often answer listener questions, which you can submit on our website at startupsfortherestofus.com. Check out the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you tune in to your favorite shows. All right, let's get back to the conversation with Derek. It's the specifics of those examples and hearing that both the features you mentioned are completely reasonable. And then you said why, right? That,
yeah.
As I remember being a brand new baby founder and just feature request, and it was like, I'm going to just build everything people want. And that's where I struggle with like the customer development or leaning too much into just build what your customers want. And then you'll hit product market fit, because I don't think that's actually true. You have to have that filter, that founder filter, to keep that vision in line, you know, and to keep the product going in a direction that doesn't just duplicate all your competitors, which is often what like less technical users want. So more technical users often want you to just build that's just way too complicated, you know, and your power users can push you in a direction where it's like you build an unusable product, or a product that then no one else wants to. You know, there's all these dangers with listening to every request a customer makes. There's a reason you're the founder and your customers are not of your particular company. You know, it's like you have to like, much like guarding the quality of your code base, we have to guard the quality of our product, right? The UX and the clutter and the overwhelm that can happen by just putting a bunch of settings everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty common trope, but learning when to say no is just extremely valuable, because you can't be everything for everyone. And it's hard to resist that temptation, especially early on when you're just clamoring to get any customers to pay you and try to get some kind of traction. Like, it's very difficult to stick to your vision and know when to say no to certain things. But I think that part, in one sense, gets a little easier as you go and you have more traction, you have a better sense of who your market is. So it's not for the faint of heart in the early days to try to solve that equation. That's just an important skill to develop.
And as you said, it does get easier. It's really hard in the early days, and then you're a year, two, three in. I think the filtering process is much easier. Tim Cook, Apple, he says that there will always be more great ideas than we can implement. We are going to have to say no to some great ideas. And I think that's being an entrepreneur as well.